You're listening to KYRS, Medical Lake Spokane, 88.1 and 92.3 FM. Hello, everybody. It's Federica on the show. So did you hear? Welcome to the show. Thank you for joining me today. And at the time of the show airing, it is almost Christmas. And it's, you know, it's been the holiday season. So hopefully it hasn't been too stressful for everyone tuning in. And for those of you who are celebrating Christmas, I hope it goes well. Next week, I don't know if I'll have a live show planned yet, as I am also doing my own Christmas plans and travel. So I will stay tuned for that. I might have another recording. I'm actually recording this, so I am not in the studio. But we'll see if I have another show planned next week. If not, it'll probably be a rerun. But I want to thank you for tuning in anyways. Of course, this is So Did You Hear, the show in which I, your gracious host, shed light on the inner thoughts and epiphanies and ideas and realizations that we often have when we slow down from everyday life. It's, you know, a little bit like a shower thought show. That's kind of what I use this platform as a lot. Although, you know, sometimes it's really big topics and big ideas, which I like to bring guests on board for. Other times, it's just kind of my own observations. But I want to invite you to come along the journey of exploration and just get thinking with me, get deep and get thinking about life on the deeper level with me, as I so often do in my pensive and very, my ADHD brain likes to think about existential things, so should be good times. And sometimes I think it's not so fun, but it can always be useful to think more deeply about things. So for today, I'm going to continue last week's topic. This is part two of the lessons that I want to take from 2024 into 2025. And I want to expand the invitation to you to reflect on what lessons you think you've learned in 2024 and what are you taking into 2025? The end of the year is always a time of reflection for me, and it's a good time to sit and think about what happened in the past year of your life. What has changed? What hasn't changed? What's been good? What hasn't been so good? What takeaways do you want to absorb and take with you to be better prepared, or at least best prepared, for the year coming ahead? Well, you know, this is a tough one. It's a weird, it's a tough year. Part one, I spent a lot of time talking about having learned a lot about myself. I think that's the thing I learned about the most this past year because of all the deep self-work I have been doing. And it's been, you know, pretty uncomfortable at times, but beneficial overall. And I focused a lot on mental health skills and concepts that I've used a lot, and exercises that I've used a lot to better understand myself and just understand my own way of thinking and how to help kind of address and fix the issues that I see myself do in my own thinking. A lot of the biases and just irrational behaviors and distorted ways that I interact with the world. So if you are interested in that, the episode, I will upload it to my page. You can find it at the KYRS page on the show page on the KYRS website. Easiest way to do that is just Google So Did You Hear KYRS. So I will be uploading that in this episode soon. But for today's topic, I want to expand a little bit more and zoom out from within myself and the really nitty-gritty psychology focus to a bigger discussion about just, you know, things in life in general and how I, you know, the biggest lessons that I've taken about how I want to show up in the world. And it's a little bit more of a practical discussion. And there's kind of three main points I'm going to try to get to today. And hopefully I'll be able to actually time myself right to discuss all of them. So with all that said, let's get right into it. So lessons I'm taking from 2024 into 2025, the first thing that I really want to try to do, and this is just a general concept, so you know, if you like this idea, apply it to your own life in whatever way makes sense to you. But the first thing that I want to do in 2025 is do more with less. So do more with less. In that sense, I'm talking about a few different things. For me, there's really kind of three main areas where I see myself wanting to do this. And that has to do with travel, prioritizing my time, energy, and attention, and who I give that to. So my relationships, and just kind of being more selective about who I give my time, energy, and attention to, and in what context. And then the third point with that is buying less stuff. So that's what I envision myself doing more of with less. That's my version of do more with less. Of course, that could mean something different to you. And I would invite you, whoever you are who is listening to this, to maybe do a little inventory and ask yourself, like, where in your life can you do more with less? I think this is always a good lesson and a good thing, a good challenge to think about and put ourselves to the test on in such a consumerist society where no matter where you look, no matter, you know, if you're on your phone, on your computer, watching TV, walking down the street, looking at a billboard, there's always some suggested message that you need more of something. So yeah, this is an impulse that I definitely have to fight back a lot, especially when it comes to junk buying and impulse buying. So I thought I would give priority to this. And the first point I'll talk about is travel, because I would say, you know, travel is one of the things that I prioritize the most in my life and is also one of the biggest black holes that my money disappears into. I love traveling, even though I feel like I don't travel, like a year where I feel like I haven't traveled a lot, I look back and I still realize, like, I actually have traveled a lot. Like, this past year, I, you know, didn't travel much at the beginning of the year. However, I went to Colorado and back. I stayed in Spokane for a while there in the spring and early summer. Then I drove to Minneapolis and lived here for several months. I was in Los Angeles in Southern California. I went to the east or to the west coast in Seattle, then again to Portland. And so even when I think I'm not doing that much, I actually still am doing quite a bit. And travel is expensive. And that is the main reason that this is on my list. Frankly, I always like traveling. I wish I could do more of it. But, you know, the reality being what it is, I just can't afford to do as much as I can. And while that can be frustrating, I've also realized something about travel recently. You know, I find myself going into a pattern where I feel like I need to keep traveling to have something to look forward to, right? Like, I would, every couple of months or so, if I haven't traveled, I start getting the itch. Like, I really just start feeling like I need to get out of here. I need to go do something. I need to change the environment. And I think that's just the kind of persona I am. Honestly, I will say part of it does have to do with just, like, being in Spokane. I've talked about this a little bit. Spokane is lovely, but it is a bit small for me. Like, I just run out of things to do. I felt like I've been running out of things to do there. And yeah, my impulse is to travel. And this isn't a bad thing, right? This is something I do value about myself. And I always value the positive benefits of traveling. You can learn a lot about yourself and others and other cultures. And it's I think, always, well, not always, but mostly a beneficial thing to incorporate into your life. However, I think it can cross over into a sort of a cycle of, like, impulsive and escapist traveling, which is, like, when I feel like I just need to go somewhere. I'll buy tickets to go somewhere because it's a response to a negative feeling, whether it's boredom, or being stressed out about my own life, or traveling somewhere because I'm having FOMO, like fear of missing out and I need to go see somewhere. Like, I've noticed that when my traveling habits are more motivated by negative emotions versus positive emotions, those things go differently. And I can actually tell, like, was this trip something that actually meant something to me, or was this just an impulse trip because I needed to get out? And I was, you know, I wasn't in a good mental state. I can actually feel the difference and tell when I make those decisions, because I make them differently. And the latter tends to be more impulsive. I end up spending more money because I don't really take the time to plan the trip very well. I'm more likely to end up unsatisfied because, let's say, I plan like a wing it trip to Seattle or maybe down to LA to go join some friends because, you know, maybe I'm feeling lonely and insecure, and that's a valid reason to want to travel, don't get me wrong. It's more about like the impulsivity of the choice that makes it so that I end up going on trips being not properly prepared, spending too much, showing up somewhere, not really knowing how to spend my time, wishing I had planned things differently. So prioritizing travel in a sense of like making sure that when you go on trips, it's something that you actually plan for and you feel like it will actually bring you a sense of reward versus traveling as a reaction to a negative state is going to be more effective in getting more bang for your buck when you travel. So that is my goal. I want to prioritize planned travel, and maybe that means I won't end up taking as many trips here and there, but I think that something we can all do better with is like the idea of traveling mindfully rather than impulsively, even though I think our culture really has this sort of addiction to the idea of like impulsive travel, you know, just send it trip to somewhere because I just had too much FOMO. And like, there's nothing wrong with that every once in a while, but it can become an impulsive, very expensive habit. So travel with intention, prioritize planned trips. And when I'm going to be thinking about it, like if I'm thinking about the trips, I've already started doing this. I was thinking about all the trips that I'm thinking about doing next year. There's a few that I had on my list. And a couple of those trips coming up were going to be pretty demanding trips, especially in terms of finance and the cost. And I felt like, oh my, I have to really make this trip. But there was this part of me in the back of my head thinking, is it really worth it? And I had to take a step back and evaluate, you know, what were my reasons for wanting to do this very intense, very involved, expensive trip versus some of the other plans that I had. Because if I dedicated all my resources to this thing, like that would consume up a lot of other resources for other trips. So what is it about? Is this really going to be a priority? And I sat with those feelings and realized that, you know, one of the big reasons that I felt pressured to participate in a said trip was basically a fear of missing out on something that I could just experience at a different time. And like, it would be one thing if I had the finances ready, but I really don't. So if you know, when you're sitting on the fence about planning travel, especially something demanding like international travel, I would say make sure that there is a real authentic positive emotion and excitement, something genuinely like positive driving you towards that decision versus negative feelings pulling you there. Things like fear of missing out, feeling like, you know, you have to, maybe for me it was like I feel like I had to go on this trip to advance myself with work opportunities. Is that, you know, just make sure it's well thought out before you just send it to some big trip and end up spending all your money. Really think it through. And I think the other benefit of being more intentional with your travel and maybe traveling a little less, but making those trips count, is that if you travel with that intention, you know, those trips that really mean something to you, that you plan, take the time to plan so that things are well thought out and you have time to really sit with the experience when you're there and you're not freaking out about like, oh, I could be doing this and I didn't plan for this, but I want to be doing this. You know, like you give yourself that time and you that opportunity to really relish the experience. I feel like those trips end up being a lot more rewarding. Those trips are always more rewarding than the last minute send it impulse trips. Because you've given yourself time to actually think things through and you can have more just time to breathe. And you know what you're getting. And it's something that keeps you full longer. You know, it's like having a good meal versus having a bunch of little junk food snacks. That's kind of how I relate to travel a lot of the time. So I think that is a really good goal to stick with. Especially if you're trying to save money. Because that is my main motivation. But yeah, there's those psychological and social benefits as well. And maybe something you can do that this is something I've been trying to do, you know, really lean into the staycation. I think staycations are underrated. I've been finding that as much as I sometimes complain about how Spokane can have a limited variety of things to do, I realize I really haven't gone that far out of my way to try to do different things. I've allowed myself to kind of stick in my rut of things that are familiar and then complain that I've gotten bored of them. But it's like I haven't really tried to change my approach entirely. Because, for example, like I go out, you know, a lot of my social life has revolved around nightlife. Spokane doesn't have a whole lot of nightlife variety available, right? We've got like Borracho's, the Globe, and Night Owl over in, you know, where they call it the Bermuda Triangle area. We've got, you know, Volstead Act and Bistango and a couple nice teeny bars. And it's enough to, like, have a regular, that's, you know, it's nice to have those regular hangouts. But after a while, I think for me, I just realized, you know, I'm just getting kind of sick of doing the going out to the bars and drinking thing. And that's really what it is. And so I've had to challenge myself to think outside of that frame to find other things to do. And although it takes a little extra digging, there are other activities I can engage in that I just haven't given myself a chance to explore in Spokane, you know. And this is something that you can easily do. Instead of going to the same restaurant you always do, go to a different one. Try a different kind of cuisine. Sign up for a class. I've been trying out different types of, you know, yoga classes, meditation workshops, art classes. Just, like, do something that's out of your comfort zone and out of the box, because that'll just help things stay fresh. And it's a new way to engage in a familiar community. Like, you don't necessarily have to leave town to have a refreshing experience and to kind of change the pace of your life. You just have to be a little more creative about it. And that's something I'm really going to challenge myself to do as well. So those are my goals related to travel. That's how I plan to do more with less in the realm of travel. The next thing that I plan to do, I don't know, this is more of like just, this kind of bleeds into the next section. But yeah, so I think I'll talk about the third, because that bleeds into the second section of, like, lessons I'm taking, like, bigger lessons. So I'll skip number two and move that to number three. I'll talk about this for now. Another goal that I want to do this year as far as doing more with less is with fashion. So I spend a lot of money on clothes, and I'm interested in fashion. I really do enjoy fashion and styling myself in outfits as a form of self-expression and creativity. So yeah, I like buying a lot of clothes, guys, and it gets really expensive. But you know, this year in 2024, I really I started paying a lot more attention to just, you know, fast fashion and the idea of how wasteful it is. And I found myself leaning into shopping as a way to also sometimes cope with negative feelings. And, you know, I would do things like take myself shopping after having a really hard day at work, or like going through something really hard through therapy. And I'll be honest, sometimes it did, there is a benefit. There is a place for rewarding yourself, right? Rewarding yourself with a little something nice when you've just gone through something hard. And when I was going through some pretty hard, challenging phases with therapy and doing all this really hard inner work, I would use shopping as a way to reward myself. And I don't think there's anything inherently wrong with that, right? Because it was a direct reward for me to something like okay, I worked for this. I deserve to treat myself. And I think that was a fine thing to do in that context. However, it might be an issue when it starts turning into shopping every time I'm bored, right? Impulse shopping and impulse buying is so easy to do for any reason, like boredom or just being on your phone too much, because, you know, these phones that we carry, these algorithms on these websites and social media apps that we use are designed to hack our impulses to get us to buy. So, you know, it really has gotten a hold of me in the past. And as much as I want to keep changing up my looks, I'm challenging myself to do more with less, right? I want to change up my look in 2025. I'm not exactly sure how yet. But rather than going and shopping a whole new wardrobe, which is just unrealistic, I want to get better at styling, right? Knowing how to actually style what is already in my closet. And know that people who hire personal stylists, which is something, you know, I heard about because of fashion-related TV shows I watch, a lot of times personal stylists will say, like, the first thing they'll do with a person is have them go through their own closet and teach them how to style things that they already own. So this is something I really want to know how to do. And when it comes to buying, I've come across this really helpful, like, method for basically auditing whether you need to really buy that thing and, like, how to train yourself to impulse buy less. And so this is called the need want like system. Basically, anytime I see myself really wanting to buy something, you know, something pops up on my phone and it looks really cool and I have to have it. Like this, there's a new pashmina scarf. I really like pashmina scarves. I see a new one and I just really have to have it. I'm like, oh my god, it's on sale, I gotta have it. My brain's freaking out. I will take the item and set it in my cart. And with Amazon, you can do this. I try not to shop on Amazon directly very much. I would suggest buying directly from a vendor rather than Amazon, because I also want to spend more ethically and support companies that have, you know, at least somewhat passable ethics. And especially if they are smaller businesses, I want to know that my money, like, I want to have a better idea of where my money is going when I shop online. So, you know, that's the little tangent there, but it is related. But anyways, before I buy an item, when I have that first, like, dopamine rush that's going, oh my god, you need this, get it, I will put the item aside and let it sit in my cart. And most shopping websites will let you keep an item in your cart for quite a while, I think up to 2 weeks or something. I go back a week later, or maybe sometimes even 2 weeks later, and look up the item that was in the cart and realize, and look at it again and decide, do I still want this? Do I still have the feeling that I need this? A lot of the times when we impulse buy, you have this, like, initial rush of buying the new thing, and then, like, the next day or two, you want nothing to do with it. I've had too many times where I've done this and I bought something and then, like, a month later, I bought an expensive outfit that I was really into, and then a month later, I'm like, okay, I'm done with this. I'm not going to wear this again. And it's just such a waste, right? It's just really unnecessary. So take your time before buying an item. And then also consider, what value does that item really bring you? Like, is this something that you need? Is this a necessity? Right? And I do this for myself with things like, maybe more expensive items, especially. Makeup can get really expensive, but what else do I buy that's expensive? That is, you know, more of a need I can live without, but really does make life easier. An air fryer, for example. Kitchen gadgets. I do this a lot with kitchen gadgets. I go, like, this thing would be cool to have, but do I need it? Realistically, how much would I use this thing? What value and benefit would it bring? And then I let it sit in my, you know, my shopping cart, let it sit in the back of my head maybe and just think about it for a while and then say, like, does this thing actually bring value to my life? Does this thing fill a gap somewhere in my, you know, list of possessions? Does it serve some purpose that something else is not already serving? And if it is, can it do it in a better way that I will benefit from? Just, like, take that time to reflect and kind of audit yourself, question yourself. I've found that this has been pretty helpful for me. I sit and think it through and go, like, okay, no, realistically, this is going to sit in my closet for 2 days. I'm going to wear it out twice, and then I'm not going to wear it again. Versus a big puffer coat? Okay, that has use. No, I don't have a lot of puffer coats. This actually would help keep me really warm. Maybe it's worth the money. And then, so you go first down the list of needs. Like, is this a necessity? If it's not a necessity, then it's a want. If you want it, can you, you know, will it still bring some value? Even though you may not necessarily need it, like, to survive, you want this item, but will it bring any unique value to you some way or another? And if not, then it's just something that you like, right? It's something that you like in the moment. You want to buy something because it's cute or it looks handy or it's intriguing. You know, whatever it is, whether it's clothing, tools, cooking gear, whatever, you know, it can be anything. If it's just something that you like, it's probably best to just say no, right? A little impulse buy every once in a while is okay. And I think an idea that's good to do no matter what, but especially if you want to allow yourself a little bit of wiggle room, is allocate a little, like, spend fund for yourself each month that you can put aside just for, like, that fun impulse of shopping, right? That way you're not just doing it all through the month. You decide, okay, this month I want to put away this amount of money that I'm going to use at the end of the month to just shop on random necessary things after you have taken care of all your needs and you've evaluated all your wants for the month. And if you have money left over, you can use that budget for spending on little whatever, you know, impulse likes that you have. But limit yourself and give yourself parameters that way, so it's not just like a runaway habit. This is a really helpful tool that I think it really has helped me spend less. And it's kind of helped me get ahead of that, like, impulsive, because it is addictive, right? There's a reason people have shopping addictions. And this method has helped me kind of get ahead of, like, that change when I felt myself shopping a little more impulsively, like, you know, something's going on in my mind, I'm bored, feeling lonely, I'm feeling stressed out because the world is on fire, whatever your reason may be, right? this exercise has helped me kind of curtail that and get ahead of that, so I'm really want to lean into that full on next year. All right, here, so we are approaching the second half of the show, and that goes into parts 2 and 3 of lessons that I want to take from 2024 into 2025. And these are going to be, more on, like, the social side of things. So this has a lot to do with, like, interacting with other people. So the first part is about how to interact with just people in general, especially in person. And then I have a whole other section dedicated to the lovely world of the internet, because that is where we live all of our lives today. And my God, are we unhinged? We are absolutely, unequivocally, unarguably unhinged. So, yeah, that's going to be a big focus. I think I see myself just spending, if I don't put some limits on it, I can really see myself getting sucked into doom scrolling and just becoming unhinged myself in the world of the internet in 2025. So it's really something that I'm really leaning into, the value of intentionality and mindfulness when it comes to how I want to show up in social situations, especially online, because we all know it's going to be a wild ride. Before I jump into that, though, I just want to give a quick shout out to our underwriters. Underwriting, it, of course, helps all of our shows stay on the air and are a huge source of support for us here at KYRS. So Did You Hear receive support from Stage Left Theater, located at 108 West 3rd Avenue in Spokane. More information at 509-838-9727 and online at stageleftheater.org. Always appreciative of all our underwriters. You guys are amazing. Thank you for helping to keep us on the air. All right, moving on. So, yep, I'm going to just keep going with the conversation here about what lessons I'm taking into the next year. And I'm moving on to part two. And part two, basically, just to succinctly wrap up what I just said there, was that I really think people skills are going to be a top necessity in the upcoming year. So showing up in social interactions with intentionality is going to be a top goal for me. Showing up with intention in my social relationships and interactions. So there's, you know, a few things that this encompasses. Number one, in my personal life, talking about friendships, family, all my personal connections, even coworkers. Maybe this is just the life stage that I'm at, but I've really felt the need to be, I really need a lot of transparency from my relationships. I'm just in this phase where I have no more time and energy left for guessing games and shaky friendships and bad communication. If there's an issue, you know, I really value direct communication and transparency and honesty in all my relationships. And that has gone from being like a something that would be nice to have to being very high on my list of priorities. So one thing for me that I want to do is really just be selective with who I give my time, energy, and attention to. And, you know, that does fall with, you know, that does fall heavily on the realm of like friendships and family. Family, of course, I understand it's, you know, it's complicated. Sometimes you have to interact with family in ways that you may not be ready to. Of course, this is the holidays. A lot of us, you know, may be having, maybe in a challenging place with our families. You know, we all are in different places. So, you know, I'm not one to give advice on how to best handle your family relationships or strained relationships. I can't do that. I'm one person. I don't know your situation, nor am I really qualified, you know, to give anything like professional advice. But if there's one piece of advice that I'm taking for myself that I think anyone can really benefit from, is to just be selective. Be selective with who you give your time, energy, and attention to. But that's not to say close yourself off to everybody, right? That is not what I'm here to say. I'm not telling you to isolate, because that's not good. We do not need more isolation in today's day and age. But I think it's a time to clean up our relationships. And maybe that means stepping back from some people, whether it's completely cutting somebody off or just, you know, maybe taking a little bit of a step back from a friendship that you've been investing a lot of time and energy into and haven't been getting a lot of energy back. That is something that you need to confront. I'm speaking for myself here, but like for me, I found that that's something I need to confront head on and bring it up and, you know, just face the thing. It's time to trim the weeds. For me, it really is. It's time for me to trim the weeds. So I find myself, I want to challenge myself to be intentional with who I give my time to in this way, because I'm a deep person. I really crave a deeper connection with people, and I've been really, I think, my whole life craving a lot of unconditional, I crave, you know, like any human, unconditional love and support. But not everybody who gives me, not everybody who's nice to me off the bat is going to give me that. Right? Not everyone is going to be your next best partner, your next best friend, etc. And, you know, unfortunately or not, you learn sometimes how being burned. I've been one to be very, maybe overly generous with how much of myself I invest in relationships. And this isn't necessarily romantic relationships for me. This is really, it happened in friendships, but I tend to overinvest and then not get enough. I don't get much back on my returns. And I have many reasons for doing this that I'm trying to figure out. Like, it has to do with my own psychology, my own mindset. But Yeah, I just I but my hand my standards are going up. I really am gonna challenge myself to, and you know, this may be uncomfortable, but like kind of audit all my social connections and ask myself when I'm about to commit to something with a friend, like for example, committing to going on a trip with a friend, right? This is where I have to like challenge myself to evaluate the reasons why I want to do that. Because I found myself being in situations where I'm thinking about planning a trip with a friend, and the idea of it starts stressing me out more than giving me good feelings. And I had to really like step back and think, like, okay, why am I even committing to this? And for me, it comes down to this question: do you actually sp like spending time with this person? This is what I would ask myself. Like, do you actually enjoy this person's company? If so, how much do you enjoy? What do you like about it? Like, is it a genuine connection there? Or am I pushing myself into this relationship because, like, I feel obligated to stick to it because of a sense of loyalty? Or is it because of fear of missing out or the fear that I, if, you know, m losing the friendship? Is it kind of like the same way that I've auditing the way that I travel? I aim to audit my personal relationships and how much time, energy, and attention I give them. Is this a connection that brings me authentic joy in which I really feel like myself? Or is this, you know, a casual friendship, a casual relationship that I need to, you know, I need to like invest in more, I need to explore a little better before I invest in it, before I really tie up my emotions into it? Or is this a friendship that's just kind of been existing and I'm just doing things and going along with things out of a feeling of obligation or a feel of being left behind and missing out? Is it, you know, is it the FOMO talking? Because for me, that's what a lot of times I've realized, like when I've ended up in unfulfilling social connections, it's because I ended up there because of FOMO, and that connection ended up not really being aligned, but I've just kind of forced it to be because of fear of losing friendship, being alone, etc. FOMO. Like, this isn't easy stuff, guys. And I could spend a whole much more more time than I already have talking about this, but I'm not gonna get any deeper into it because I have spent so much time talking about this aspect of relationships lately. But that is a, you know, that is something that I'm going to be thinking about this next year for sure. Just being selective with who you give yourself to in general. People skills are going to be a top necessity. Whether it's in your personal relationships or in greater society, I think this is, nobody is like, nobody doesn't know this already, but it is time that I think we all really sit with the fact that we are, as a people here in the United States and even all across the world, like we live in a weird time. People are very dysregulated and unhinged right now. Like, people, we are unhinged. Especially here in the United States, but it's certainly not just in the United States. We are just in a time where we are surrounded by people who are in all sorts of states of distress, and people are just kind of losing, they're losing it right now, right and left. Like, people are just going completely unhinged. So, unfortunately, that has left me feeling like I need to have my guard up a little bit more. Especially interacting with people I don't know. And I don't like that. I really don't. I'm the kind of person that really just, I'm like the, why can't we just all get along person, right? Like, the idealist in me hates to see this happen. I don't think this is the direction our society should be going. But here we are. And I don't know. This is an area that's challenging for me. I do feel like I need to have my guard up a little bit more than I would like to. Just for the fact, and I have to like really remind myself that it's not because I'm being calloused and uncaring or unempathetic, because it can feel that way. Sometimes when you bring up boundaries or you're raising your boundaries, it can feel like an act of betrayal, like you're being selfish or you're being calloused. And I'm really challenging myself to see it differently. Because the thing is, you can't control what's going on in everybody else's heads. And we're in a place where there's a lot of crazy things going on in other people's heads, right? That sense of having to keep a little bit of more of a guard up is a protective thing. It's not an act of cruelty or indifference. It's self-protection. And I would like to approach it with the idea of still being open to people. You know, I can give people the benefit of the doubt and be kind and calm. That's the best thing I can do. You can be guarded, but also be kind, and just in your interactions with people, aim for calm, right? Because people are so reactive. And I think there's a lot of reasons for why we're so reactive now, but people are so hyper-reactive, where I almost sometimes feel like I have to, like, you know, we get this in family, like, now's a perfect time of year to think about this. Like, you're maybe linking up with family, and your family is split between all different sides of the political aisle, and now everybody feels like they're walking eggshells around each other. Like, we get it, and it is, I don't know, there's no easy solution there. And maybe some people in your family don't have the self-regulation skills to be able to keep themselves from going unhinged and flying off a handle. But this is always something that you can do, right? In any situation, in comfortable interactions, aim to be the calm one. You don't have to aim to be the right one. And for me, this is hard because I like to be right, right? Everyone likes to be right. But sometimes being right isn't the most important thing. Right now, when this is explosive, the energy that we are all in as a society, what we need more of is calm, right? So I want to change myself to be the calm person. That's not to say be complacent and shut down and shrivel away from difficult conversations and hide away from topics and dissociate forever, because that's not helpful. But it's to handle things with calm. And it's a learned skill. Trust me, if it seems hard, it's not because there's something wrong with you. It's because it is hard. So, but it's something that you can try to do. Being calm and civil. Like, this is a people skill that everyone has seemingly lost, right? It's having, being able to have civilized conversation. And just treating people with kindness, and this is something that I have to, I catch myself, almost, like, scold myself, like, dude, that wasn't very nice, and it's just a self-regulation skill that I've been trying to improve when I'm out in public, especially something like the grocery store, right? Like, usually, I don't particularly love grocery shopping. I wait until the time of day where I'm starving, so I'm, like, losing my mind, because I'm just trying to get in and out as quickly as possible, and somebody's at the counter, like, checking out, yapping away with the clerk, and I'm just getting really impatient, and there's like a switch that flips where I can go into like raging jerk mode, and I just have to stop myself and be like, you know, there is enough of that in the world right now. Can you try a little bit harder? Just try like a little bit harder, and I bet you can do it. I bet you can respond to the situation with calm, instead of flying off the handle at your first knee-jerk reaction. This is a muscle we all really need to exercise. We're gonna need it going into this new year. We really are. And with that said, that point brings me into my third and final section of the categories of things that are on my mind and the next beast to tackle in 2025. God, I can't even talk. And that is the lovely, unpredictable, undescribable, wonderful world of the internet. I am changing my approach to how I take on the internet, or at least I'm challenging myself to develop a different relationship with the internet. You know, I think there's one big lesson that I've taken, not just from 2024, but just in general in the last 8 years of life. I mean, the just in this last decade, honestly. And it's just become abundantly clear if you take time to pay attention, but a lot of people still don't seem to be catching on to this, and this is really getting people into trouble. And it's the fact that, you know, the internet has profoundly changed the way that we relate to and communicate with one another, and has thrown this huge disruptor into society. It's been a massive, it's caused massive change in a very short span of time, and we're all still newbies here trying to catch our breath and catch up. And when you're going on the internet, and I think for me, especially going on social media, responding to things, there's going to be a lot of inflammatory things all over the internet this year with the new administration coming in. And, we anticipate it being very messy. And as you go on there, it's very hard to just tune out of the internet, as much as people like to praise, like, just log off. It's hard to do. Especially if you're someone who works in something like journalism and the media, like me, where I can't just turn off the world, right? But I have to be, try to be, like, develop a way to navigate it so that I can stay sane. And that's not easy. But one thing that I think is really important for everyone to remember about the internet, and it is this: the internet, and specifically social media, hates balance and loves extremes. The internet and social media, any kind of social discourse that happens on the internet is fueled through extremes. There is a reason for why everything that you hear, anytime you see a political debate, a discussion about a social topic, heck, it can even be about, I don't know, like, what a celebrity wore to the Met Gala, and, like, it was the best thing ever. No, it was the worst thing ever. Like, it is all just one extreme or the other. Boom, boom. Body positivity, body negativity. You're either, like, I can go down the whole can of worms that I don't have time for, but basically, and I think a lot of us have already learned this, but a lot of us still don't see it. The internet, like, the way social media algorithms work is by feeding people images, ideas, text, things, content that they are more likely to engage with. And because the way human psychology works, we are drawn to extreme things that spike our emotions, right? We're drawn to engage with things that are going to spike our emotions in either a very positive way or a very negative way. And overwhelmingly, it really caters to the negative, right? That is part of the cognitive biases that humans live with. And that's where I talk more in depth about this in part one of this discussion in last week's episode. I still recommend listening to that if you haven't. I'll post once I post it up to my page. Human negativity bias is a very real force that drives a lot of how we interact with content that we see online. And the algorithms feed off of this, right? That's what an echo chamber is. You're fed more of the types of information that you're already likely to engage with, and so are all the people around you. This creates information silos. I see this especially, like, on TikTok, and, like, people just get sucked into this. I'm saying it's hard not to, because I get sucked into it as well. The internet thrives on sharing extremes. The internet doesn't like to promote videos, like social media outlets like Snapchat, or not Snapchat, TikTok and YouTube algorithms. Like, the videos that talk about, like, I don't know, what's a good example? Like, what's more likely to get attention? Some video about somebody, like, ranting about something outrageous that some politician did, or, like, you know, going crazy raving about this brand new amazing product that they can't believe is so amazing, or somebody that is just kind of has them in the middle view, like, the balanced view on something. Somebody who's just, like, normal, a normal personality talking about doing normal everyday things, and who has a kind of a balanced point of view on things, that doesn't tend to get as much engagement. Guys, these social media algorithms are designed to hijack your brain and hijack your emotions. And this is just something, I don't know how people are still not catching on to this. I think there's a certain sect of people that don't care to educate themselves or are already too far gone in misinformation and misleading, you know, believing that anything that goes against their beliefs is part of a conspiracy, that they're out of reach. Like, I don't know what to do about that. I wish I did. I really do. But gosh, we all need to know this lesson. Like, the internet hates balance and loves extremes. So before you go, I guess, doom scrolling, going online and seeing outrageous, you know, you're going to be exposed to a lot of outrageous content that is designed to get you upset. Remember that you are seeing a very specific angle on things. Like, what you're seeing does not represent society as a whole. And I really still have to... it's hard because things aren't going well for us in this society right now. I really don't think so. And it's hard to lose... It's easy to lose faith in people. And I have to remind myself that the crazy things I see online aren't representative of my everyday life, right? Don't turn your everyday life... Don't, like, confuse the two things, because everything you see online is filtered and projected through a specific angle for a purpose that is then filtered by an algorithm. Like, it's... You have to be able to build some level of separation with it. And it's hard to do for somebody who spends a lot of time online, so I understand the challenge. So, for example, for me, one thing that is hard is, like, not getting engaged in comment wars, comment battles, where if I see somebody post something outrageous or post a stupid comment on something, I feel compelled to respond to it. Before I do, I really think it's a good idea to take a step back, walk away from the phone or the computer for a few minutes, do something else, and let that reaction stew, so you don't just engage in the knee-jerk reaction, because that is what those posts are designed to do. That is what, like, the algorithm wants. Before you go and comment on something, and or if you go responding to a comment that upsets you, remember that trolls and rage bait feed on outrage. That is part of the machine, so take some time, step away, breathe, like, distract yourself for a minute, and then if you still feel compelled to think about it, go back to that comment and evaluate, like, okay, if I go and respond to this ignorant person, how likely am I to change this person's mind? Or is it, honestly, the chances are pretty low, but can I make a positive contribution to this conversation rather than a negative one? And if so, is it worth it? Like, just, that's really the question, is it worth it to you, to your mental health, to any repercussions? And if you are going to comment, I really try to be civil. Again, use those principles of, like, be civil. As much as you might want to shout and cuss another person out, trust me, I get it. I try to think of it like, okay, this is a comment that is really damaging and this person is maybe spreading some pretty harmful misinformation. Okay, I go and respond. Instead of calling that person an idiot and insulting them, take a step back from that emotional response and think, what is the value of responding to this comment? What is the goal? Is it to if it's to counter misinformation, then I would think, like, to respond in a calm way. And I trick myself by doing this sort of comparison, where I imagine if I were a scientist interfering with an experiment, what would be the best way for me to approach this? What is the most, like, kind of, if I'm trying to educate, what is the most impactful way for me to be educational in this context? Is it for me to scream and shout at this person? Probably not. If you really have to comment, just try to be civil, right? And then walk away. Because otherwise, you know, it's just gonna, anyone can get dragged down the rage bait rabbit hole, and the algorithm benefits from that. Like, it's a trap. I try to stay away from comments in general, honestly, or turn off commenting on my posts sometimes on my Instagram page, like, because there are people who just go there to troll, and a lot of times it does nothing but make me upset. So keep a long arm's length from comments on social media posts and issues. And if you really feel compelled, really think about it deeply before you go and engage in that mess. Right? And then finally, I won't have a lot of time to talk about this as I have just a couple minutes left. But the main thing I really want to draw attention to that we really have to watch out for online is, like, I've mostly seen this on TikTok, but I've seen it everywhere. But misleading health information. You guys, if you or maybe you're one of your kids, maybe a grandkid is really into watching health videos and health trends, this is something that can be so, so harmful. I think we stop getting medical advice from TikTok. TikTok is not a doctor. A lot of people giving fake advice on TikTok don't know what they're talking about. There are a lot of people selling scams and selling ideas that are really harmful. And it is astounding the kind of things that I've come across on so-called health talk, right? Things like people drinking borax as an anti-inflammatory, anti-aging process. Guys, do not drink borax. It'll make you super sick. Okay, but there are people peddling borax as this miracle aging cure. There's people doing coffee enemas, okay? If you don't know what that is, an enema is a medical procedure where a person injects fluid up their rectum. Do not do this with coffee, people. There are people doing this thinking that it has some magic detoxifying benefit. It's sent people to the hospital, and people have died from this. I've seen super expensive LED face lasers that are supposed to magically zap your wrinkles go all away, and they're a waste of money. They're a scam. And then, of course, the $500 water scam on Water Talk, where you pay $500 for this apparently ultra-purified water that just comes from somebody's tap in Oregon. TikTok is full of these scams. If it sounds too good to be true, it probably is. Watch out for these. And if your kids or grandkids are on these apps and they're, you know, watching this kind of content, be very weary and maybe interfere, like, even if they don't like you for it, because there is a lot of really harmful information going out there. So much misinformation. And from everything I've read about this, like, there are doctors and nurses and actual medical professionals are having a really hard time keeping up with the level of misinformation, medical misinformation that people are getting exposed to and ending up in the hospital for. So, long story short, do not use TikTok for health remedies, okay? TikTok is not a doctor. Do not go there for medical advice. Or Instagram or anything else, go talk to your doctor, okay? Okay, so now that we got that clear, that is all the time we have for today. So, that is my list of lessons I'm taking from 2024 to 2025. There were three main topics, basically. You know, I talked about a lot, and I went to some detail, but just to kind of wrap it up, it was, number one was do more with less. So, I talked about how I prioritize travel and shopping and how I'm spending my money. Number two was that people skills are going to be a top necessity in 2025. And number three is to be cautious about how I interact with the internet. So, yeah, there's a lot to be said there. Again, this is part two to a part one. There was a whole other half of this conversation that was all about introspective learning and mental health and cognitive skills that you can use that I've learned from my own therapy journey. So that will be available as well. Thank you all for tuning in. I hope you enjoyed today's show. I hope it was thoughtful and insightful for you. And if you have any questions or comments or any thoughts that you would like to contribute, you are welcome to reach out to me at my email, sodidyouhear@kyrs.org. Again, the email is sodidyouhear@kyrs.org. Merry Christmas. Thank you for tuning in, and I will catch you next time. Bye-bye.